Hello, and welcome to another episode of Mike M's Weekly Reads. I haven't done this in a long time, at least it seems like a long time. I think it's going on 2 weeks. There's been a lot going on. I've been trying my hardest to get a lot of work done at work before I leave for C2E2, and it's been taking up a lot of my time, and probably would still just be getting off of work today if we didn't have this blizzard, like where they closed everything. They like never closed my work, and they had a mandatory leave at noon type thing today, and I left at 10:30, and I'm so glad I did because I even had to get off on the major thruway because the wind was blowing cars around like you wouldn't believe. Like, luckily I was in the four-wheel drive. It wasn't pushing me as much as it was the cars, but I even had to get off the major road because it was just blowing so hard. Freaky wind. It's crazy freaky wind. No matter what did they call it? I forget what they called it. They called it a bomb cyclone. And we had like 90 mile an hour winds and just a ton of snow. It wasn't really like a ton of snow, but it accumulated a ton of snow because the wind like piled it up against the house. And it was brutal, and I'm just glad that I didn't drive in it because there was a thousand, thousands of people stranded, a lot of deserted vehicles, and I'm glad I'm not one of them. And Barb just took the day off because she didn't even want to go in because of the conditions. And they had closed every single school like the night before, so the they had prepared ahead of time. All the bases were closed. Everything was closed. So it was a really interesting storm, this bomb cyclone. And I just hope that the wind doesn't pick up any more than it was, because those winds were just nasty. And I haven't even been able to go outside to assess any damage, but one of our fences looks like in poor shape. So I'll have to probably get that repaired fairly soon because it didn't look good. But anyway, I've been pretty busy, haven't been reading a lot, been working a lot, long hour days, and I'm finally seeing a light at the end of the tunnel, hopefully. I can enjoy this vacation and not be stressed out about it. But that's what's been going on. I didn't re because I had to work last Sunday. I didn't record Geek Brunch or DC Spotlight, so behind in all kinds of podcasting, and I wouldn't have had time. I would just be getting home, like I said, from work, if it wasn't for this blizzard. The blizzard brought me home. I got to read some comics today and watch some Walking Dead. We actually got caught up on Walking Dead, which has been, I think it's been really good this season. It's keeping my attention. I'm very interested in seeing what these highwaymen are about, and see where everything goes from there. We saw Captain Marvel. I thought it was good. I didn't think it was great. Wasn't one of my favorite Marvel movies. It was probably on the lower end tier of Marvel movies. But even the low end tier is a good movie. I enjoyed myself watching it. But I just thought the plot was sort of weak. But the effects and everything was pretty cool. Even though the plot was very similar to what was that? Sounds like she was gonna vomit. That was my dog making a weird noise. But if you had read the early Jim Starlin Captain Marvel, which I had just read fairly recently, I hadn't. I don't own them, but I was reading them on the Marvel Unlimited app, and you can check them out. I'd highly recommend it. They're really good. I thought it was going to be like boring sci-fi, But they sort of took the plot off of the original Captain Marvel, even though it was a male. It's loosely based on that. But I was sort of feeling that part of it. I like that. And it killed at the box office, so I was glad that it did well because of all the shenanigans that were going on Rotten Tomatoes before the movie even aired. It was really pissing me off how fans could just shit on something because of ridiculous reasons and have not have watched anything. That's a big pet peeve of mine. For anybody to complain about something without witnessing it or reading it or experiencing it for yourself, it just drives me nuts. Condemning something without having read the product or seen the product. So, you also saw Glass. I like that better than Captain Marvel. I thought that was a really good movie, a really good end to the trilogy. Pretty amazing. I don't think his intent was to make this shared universe of his, but it came out of Split. I think when he was creating Split, and he was like, "Well, wow, Marvel does it, DC's doing it. I wonder if I can do it. Hasbro's doing it. I'll give it a shot." And it worked in this particular case very well. But I am a fan of M. Night Shyamalan. I've liked all his movies, even the ones like Lady in the Water and stuff like that. Like I think they have a lot to offer. There's not too many of them. I think one of them was Devil, about an elevator, people stuck in an elevator. I think he did that one. There's been a lot of his movies. A lot of them haven't done well. A lot of them have done well. The Sixth Sense being one of probably his biggest. There was the one about the aliens, but I can't, Signals, I think it was Signs. I think that was one that was a big hit. Unbreakable, I think, did fairly well. Split, and I don't know if Glass really knocked it out of the park, but I really enjoyed it. So a lot of things on the movie front. And then on the TV, I haven't been wanting to. So I finished Runaways, and I just haven't been, other than being sort of caught up on Arrow, I haven't been wanting to watch TV much. But I have been watching a lot of DVDs, physical media. I love physical media. And I was trying to figure out what to watch. And I came across Dick Tracy, and I popped it in. And I was like, I was in awe. It's the best movie I watched this year. I had watched it originally very shortly after Batman. So Batman came out in 89. I think Dick Tracy came out in 90. And I really liked it, especially visually. And I even went to the store. Me and Barb were together at the time, and we'd go to like KB Toys and Toys R Us and search for the Dick Tracy Playmates figures, and I think I have close to a full set. I didn't get any of the cars or any of the accessories, which I kind of bummed out about. But I do want to go to the basement when I have a chance and dig those figures out because I really miss them, especially now that I just saw the movie. And I was blown away with the music, the visuals, the plot. Al Pacino is the big boy. Oh my God, he was amazing. I could just watch his scenes like over and over again. I love how he quotes like famous people when he gets upset and stuff, and Dick Tracy, and then the kid they had. It just worked well. And then Madonna was in it, and I had forgotten that she was kind of like the question. They call him blank, the blank, and I forgot she was that character. I totally spaced it out. But I remember watching it at the theater, and as I was doing some Amazon shopping a couple months ago, I was like, you know what, I really want to watch Dick Tracy again, and I did. And makes me want to dig into that IDW series of Dick Tracy. So I'm looking forward to that. I'm looking forward to checking it out. And then me and Kyle are going to be covering Green Arrow Longbow Hunters and The Terrifics, so I still need to read those, and Heroes in Crisis. And I've been reading those, I've been experiencing those as they've come out. And Tom King had a good streak with me for like 3 issues, and then the last one came out, and I'm like, oh, I'm not feeling that. Like, I didn't even feel like it really added anything to the story, it didn't advance it anywhere, except get us to know Narc a little bit. The Titan Caveman, which shows up, he's shown up in Titans fairly recently, and he originally appeared in the Silver Age Teen Titans series, which I have a complete run of. So he's been around for a while, but issue focused on him and didn't really, in my opinion, advance the story at all. But I am caught up on that, so I just got to get caught up on the Terrifics to record with Kyle, hopefully, before C2E2, so I could get the episode out as fast as possible, and then hopefully do a Geek Brunch or a Geek Brunch Retro, whichever one lines up right. And the last thing I wanted to talk about is I'm really making progress on the Guesser, so I scripted the whole thing, and I'm kind of glad what happened is the artist that I talked to about it last year finally contacted me and he said, "Were you serious about this? You know, do you want to do it?" And I said, "Yeah," but I looked for my script and I only found like the first, I think it was 6 pages. And I was like, holy crap, I have this all in my head, but what happened to the last? I know I scripted it. I'm not going nuts. I scripted the entire thing. So some things changed from the original script because I re-scripted it. One of the things that I did, I like it more, but I think there was a scene, a couple scenes in the middle that I totally just scrapped, but I think they were pretty good. And what I found is it's tough to like come up with something. I started off the script being like an Alan Moore script where I detailed everything, like this was in the panel, this and that. And then we did some correspondence and then as I got closer to the end of the script, I was almost doing the Marvel way and then letting him interpret. I kind of like it. I kind of like it because it seems like you have a lot of flexibility, like just giving the overall plot and letting the artist visualize it. So, my comic will probably be, I'm still probably a year out. There's a page, I think it's 2 pages are done. 8 pages have been thumbnailed. It's about 22 pages, and I'm probably gonna take a huge loss on this. Like, I don't know who's interested in it, but it's like a, I know my some of my friends will support it, and I anticipate probably losing a grand, even if I kickstart it, because I don't want to kickstart it and do something that I don't like in a Kickstarter. I want to give people a value add, and I want to actually make my Kickstarter tier 10 bucks, which some people do, but then they charge you shipping, so then it's like 16 bucks for a single issue. I don't want to do that. I want to send out my comic priority mail, which is going to be a little over $6 shipping because they raised rates. And so that's $6, then offer my comic for like 3 or $4, and you know, just do it for 10. And I don't want to have all these different tiers. I may have two covers, but I just want to see how it'll do. And I really don't care. I don't care if people hate it. I don't really care. It's just that I did it, and I've already thought of doing First in Awe, which is another comic book, and how it's going to sort of tie into the Guesser, and I even have Bill's character in my comic, so it's like building a continuity, and I have a lot of ideas. So if I don't lose too much money, I think it's gonna be fun to at least see like 5 issues. And the thing I also did with this issue is I'm a big fan of Kickstarters that sort of tell a complete story. And with this one, I told a complete story, and it just has little hooks that could lead to a future. And it I always like Kickstarters that do that, because another Kickstarter, you might have to wait like, I don't know, like 2 years to get the next one, and then you already forgot what the first one's about. So there was that Sky Pirate one I read, and I really, really liked it. And I don't know when the next available book will be out. So I wanted to make this like a done in one. In the event that I don't do another one, the story's told, even though there's more to tell. It has a beginning, a middle, and an end. And it has a continuity for a universe in there. You might not see it, but I see it. And Bill, my co-host, will probably see pieces of it because his character's in there. So we'll see where that leads us. That it was a lot of fun to do once I got going, and I still don't have everything ironed out. The art is coming out way, way better than I expected it to be. It is looking amazing. I haven't decided if I want to go black and white, but if I do go color, I might do a black and white and a color version, but then I have to pay a colorist. And I haven't decided if I'm gonna try to letter this myself or have somebody do it. So I just don't want it to blow out of control, so I'm stuck with a lot and eat a lot of the cost, because it could be quite expensive when you add it all in. And then you got printing costs and artist costs, and I'm not making any off of it. But then I'll have a colorist potentially, and a letter that I'll have to worry about. So when you add it all up, oof, it's a lot of money. So I'm hoping I can get this book out by the next year, if not earlier. But we'll see how everything pans out. You think 22 pages can be done in a year, but when you're not really focused on it, and you have a full, more than full-time job and a full-time hobby, it gets to be tough to put all this extra effort into something. But I'm looking forward to it. As I see more pages, I have, like I said, there's about 8 thumbnails. It gets me really pumped to see how. You know what's really exciting is you put these words down. Especially when, like, the first 4 pages were tightly scripted, so it's still surprising when you see an artist interpret what you wrote. But it's even more exciting when you do it looser and you see the interpretation on how it's displayed. That is the most exciting thing for me, is to see how that's done. So, having said that was one of the things I wanted to talk about before I got into the weekly reads. And I wanted to talk about how much I was loving Dick Tracy, 'cause that movie is I even watched like a couple scenes just over and over again 'cause I liked it so much. And I think I have the soundtrack here somewhere. And if I do, I'm gonna pull that out and listen into it on my CD player. So, I thought it would also be fun to go over the Hot 10 comics for March 8th. And I didn't usually I have like 5 to 6 of the top 12, and I include the honorable mentions. This is from comicbookinvest.com. I like to read this, and you could tell I don't buy a lot of variants. So like the first one is Die Number One Virgin variant. It does have a nice cover. I have number one. I've read it. I didn't like it too much because it fell into that like Dungeons and Dragons realm. But that book seems to be hot and popular for some reason. Even the regular edition seems to be selling well online. And then number two is the Venom number 7 Secret Tongue variant. So that's a variant that's going well for, 50 to $40 to $50, and it's also the first appearance of Dylan Brock, Eddie's son. So keep an eye on that book just as a first appearance, because you never know if this character is going to blow up. Got Fantastic Four 65, and why is that a popular issue? It's because it's the first appearance of the Kree and Ronan the Accuser, which appeared in the Captain Marvel movie. And it's probably undervalued, but it's probably going to go up very, very, very fast. So I don't have that. A lot of the early Fantastic Four issues that I do have, I was focusing on the Inhumans because I love them so much. And I do have the first appearance of Galactus, but not the first appearance of the Surfer. And I have the first appearance of Black Panther. But I have a long ways to go on the early issues of the Fantastic Four, and obviously I'll never have number one. Or I really wish I would have bought the facil f facsil how do you say that? Facsilum? I can never pronounce that word. Facsimile? It's spelled even funky. Facsimile edition. I wasn't getting those, but I w would like to. She doesn't want to go outside, Barb. Go on outside, Harley. She's like, I don't want to go out in the bomb blast of a weather. It's cold. But the next one is Superboy number 9. This is one I do have. It's the first appearance of King Shark, and he's listed as being in Suicide Squad 2. I am disappointed that Will Smith is not going to be in it. Rick Flagg, Barb and I really liked the guy who played Rick Flagg. He did a great job. And it seems like the only one that has potential to be in it is Harley. And I really like the entire cast of Suicide Squad. For me personally, I find that to be one of my favorite DC movies, especially when they started to do the shared universes. I think it is my favorite movie. It's the one I've watched the most. It's the one I enjoy. A lot of repeatable watching of that, and I love it just because I've always wanted to see like Deadshot on the screen and see all these like C-list and D-list characters in this situation, and I absolutely loved it. I loved it. I love the plot. I love the execution. I thought it was a fantastic movie. And I know that the sequel will be good. It just will miss it. It'll miss the continuity. Like they'll probably replace Killer Croc with King Shark, and that's why his book is going up. So that's Superboy number 9, volume 3. The Carl Kessel, Roberto Ramos. The next one that's popular is Umbrella Academy, Dallas number 1, Jim Lee variant. A lot of the Umbrella Academy is popular because of their Netflix. We watched the first episode of Umbrella Academy, and my parents were in town, and I think all four of us were ready to fall asleep. It was so slow and boring. I didn't like it. It's going to take a lot of energy for me to go back to it. I don't know if I'll ever finish it. But I don't own any Umbrella Academy either, so I wasn't attached to any of the characters. And when they were in the show, I didn't become attached to the characters. The overall plot seemed pretty cool. It was just a slow-paced execution. The actors weren't bad. It just you couldn't like get emotionally attached to any of them. Whereas Deadly Class, me and Barb are really loving that one. The next one's kind of a surprise, and I don't know why it's a little different because I do have both versions of this, but I think this is like a specialty version. This is the Ziggy Pig Silly Seal number one secret poop variant. And I think of all the ones that they released, it was one in every five or something like this had a poop variant. And I haven't read this yet. I'm really curious to read it. I don't think I have the poop variant, and I wouldn't even know how to identify the poop variant via the cover because I don't see any poop on the cover, so I don't know how to see this. The seventh one is the Mall number one. This one I do own, and me and Bill talked about it very highly. It is a fantastic 80s mafia type about a bunch of characters like Breakfast Club that shouldn't be together that are together, and they're sort of linked to what could potentially be the same father. So it makes it really interesting. They put out a couple issues. I have seen on DCBS though that they have refunded my money on future issues. So I don't know how that's coming out. I'm not impressed totally with Vault and Scout because they've been not as they remind I sometimes I can't even tell the difference between Vault and Scout because they seem to be targeting random genres and just putting books out, kind of like Aftershock and Image. And this one I absolutely loved. I gave it an A plus. I hope that they resolicit the rest of the story because I find the Don Hadfield and James Hayek writing was phenomenal in the Raphael Lorisi Lorio, I can't even pronounce it. Lorio art was fantastic. The next one I do own, but I don't own the variant, Astro Hustle number one from Dark Horse. That one seems to be doing really well, the Greg Smallwood cover. Number nine is Domino Hot Shots number one. I do own that too, but I don't own the J. Scott Campbell 1 in 50 variant. It looks like Harley wants to go out now after she fought tooth and nail about going outside into this crazy weather. And now she decides she wants to go. And she. I might need a screwdriver to get that. Ice out of the doorway. Might need your magic screwdriver. Is it packed in there? Good girl. She braved the weather. She did her thing. So, yes, I have it, but I don't have the variant. Number 10 is Hulk number 15, which has the first appearance of the Red She-Hulk, which seems to be really hot because of what they're doing in Immortal Hulk right now. I do have that. The honorable mentions I have, but I don't have the variant. Eternals number one. There's supposed to be a movie coming out. Well, this is the 30-cent price cover that's hot, not the regular size cover. And then Planet Comics number one, I would love to have that, but that's in the $1,000 range. And it said a 9.4 mile high copy sold in December for 108K. That's pretty freaking amazing. I would love to have it. That's something I probably will never have. Those were the top few. If we go to coverprice.com, there was some interesting articles about comics. If I click on that, They monitor eBay, so they monitor what's actually selling. One of the shakers is Universe X Spidey number one recalled edition. I don't know much about that, but I think recalled editions are worth a lot because the second shaker is League of Extraordinary Gentlemen number five recalled edition. I don't know why they were recalled. I didn't read up on it. I'm just sort of saying what's hot. Shaker Transformers number one CGC 9.8 is selling for a lot because of Hasbro saying they're restarting the Transformer franchise, basically based on Bumblebee. Mr. Miracle number one is selling really well from 1971. I do own that. Some New England newsletter, I have seen this on Twitter, is number 14 is selling a lot because it's like sort of the first appearance of the Tick. And that's selling for a ton. Immortal Hulk number 14. That one everybody should be getting because you should be subscribing to Immortal Hulk. I have that one. And then they talk about Hulk number 14. I have that. I have a full run of that. Hulk number 15 standard. The first appearance of Red She-Hulk. Port of Earth has been optioned, so that's hot. Number one. The Cursed Pirate Girl, number one, from Comic Express. A raw copy sold for $750. This is an interesting one because we used to always see this guy, Bastian is his name. I can't remember his first name, but we used to see him at every convention. And I do own a copy of Cursed Pirate Girl, but I don't own this Comics Express edition. I actually am amazed by his art, but when I read it, I didn't like it. I didn't like the story. But his artwork is so hyper detailed. It is pretty freaking amazing to see it. If you ever get a chance and you're at a con and you see him and he's selling a Cursed Pirate Girl, you should really check it out to see if it's your thing. It is worth it just to absorb the artwork. It really will blow you away. Another shaker is Teen Titans 75 Adam Hughes variant. I don't have an Adam Hughes variant. The 1 in 25 variant. Die number 1 is selling like crazy. The Virgin variant plus the regular variant. The regular edition selling well as well. Edge of Spider-Verse number 2. This one I don't own. It's the only one I don't own. And I am so stupid. I originally passed on the whole series. And then I heard about Spider-Gwen. And it was already going up. It was like in the 20s. And I'm like, what's this character gonna become popular? The comic shop, the LCS, I didn't pre-order it, so the LCS guy said, "You know what? I have a copy. I'll sell it to you for $8." And this was like a week or two after it came out. And I'm like, "You have a copy in the back for $8, and it's doubling in 1 2 weeks." I said, "That's ridiculous." So now it's in the hundreds, and I probably won't have an issue. That's the only one of the Edge of Spider-Verse that I'm missing. There's a Flyboy issue that's hot. I don't even know what that is. The Ziggy Seal. They talk about the honorable mentions, the top 10 update. Ziggy Seal, the poop variant. Sold 57 copies, had a 7-day trend of 725%, and a high sale of a $37 raw variant. I wonder what the deal is on this, though. I wonder why, what makes it a poop variant, because the cover, I can't tell. Also, the Hulk number 15, they talk about Superboy number 9. Old Lady Harley is selling for like $25 raw because it's the first appearance of old Joker, old man Joker. Deadpool number 10 has the first appearance of the Good Knight. I don't have that. Hulk number 16 is the first full appearance of Red She-Hulk. I do have that. Detective Comics 585, first appearance of Rat Catcher, supposed to be confirmed character for Suicide Squad 2. I do have that. Umbrella Academy Free Comic Book Day Edition. Don't have that. And then Die Number 1 is selling well. Immortal Hulk Number 14. I have that. Port of Earth Number 1. I have that. Immortal Hulk Number 12 is hot. I have that. Miss Marvel Number 1. 1977 is hot. I do have that. Eternals Number 1. I do have that. Batman the Damned. It says it's slowly slipping down, but still selling for quite a bit. I do have that. I have both covers. Ultimate Fallout Number 4, the first appearance of Miles Morales. I have that. Superboy Number 0, the first cameo of King Shark, selling well. I have a whole run of that. Naomi Number 1 is selling quite a bit. Her first full appearance. So maybe she's going to be the hot character. So that was just some random, like, speculator stuff, which I don't really give a shit about, but I do give a shit about it because I used to always love opening up Wizard Comics magazine and seeing what my comics were worth. I used to love that back section. What's hot? What's not? Been getting a lot of Wizard magazines. I did get a shipment from Reed. I don't know if I mentioned this, but it had a lot of Captain America, which I think is gonna get me like, I think I'm gonna need like 30 issues, 20 to 30 issues left of Captain America to finish the run. So I'm very close to finishing the first volume. Well, not the Golden Age volume, the first Marvel Comics volume, not the timely. Captain America, which starts at issue 100 and goes forward. So that looks like it's going to be a doable do, hopefully this year, maybe next year. I'll have a full run of that. And he did fill in a couple of my Married with Children's. I'm looking to finish all of the Now Comics Married with Children. I have been watching a ton of Married with Children on the Logo channel, I think that's what it's called. It's actually the gay and lesbian channel. They have really weird ties to like what they program, but there's always a link to having a gay or lesbian character. And the loose thing for Married with Children is that the neighbor lady, I can't even think of her name, Marcy, she is a lesbian in real life. And then after I watched like 6 hours of Married with Children, then they showed another 6 hours of Three's Company. And why is that on the Logo channel? Is because Jack Tripper has to pretend he's gay in order to stay in the apartment. I guess they have rules against living with women. But he gets away with it because he tells the landlords, the first landlord was the Ropers. The second lad was Mr. Furley, which was played by Don Knotts. So they both those landlords think he's gay, and that's why they allow him to be in the apartment with two women. And I love Three's Company. Absolutely love that show. So been watching a lot of Logo lately, especially while I'm bagging and boarding comics. And I did get a lot of magazines, Savage Sword of Conan. I got my first Hulk. It's actually the first Rampaging Hulk comic book, sorry, magazine. And I have the first issue, and then I have the very first issue where they turned it to color because that magazine was black and white, but then turned to cover, I think, with issue 11. So I have my very first Hulk magazines, and I did get that Star Lord, first appearance of Star Lord magazine, and it was in a CGC. I think it was graded 7.5. It was either 7.0 or 7.5, which is a really good grade for me personally. And I had Barb crack the CGC off of it because I consider those prisons. And what I do is I put that in a Mylar magazine, Mylar and halfback. And then I take the grade and I put it in the back so I remember what it was graded officially. So, thanks for listening to that, and I'm going to talk really quickly about some weekly reads. So, I may do 2 weeks, but we'll see how this goes because I had a lot of descriptions. So this was for February 11th through February 17th. There were a total of 30 comics, 15 Marvel, 2 Dynamite, 13 DC. You're going to be seeing a lot of Venom. I've been reading the Venom Omnibus, and he's kind of my adopt a character for the year. Matter of fact, I'm adopting two characters. I'm adopting Venom. So my goal is when I adopt a character for the year that I want to read as much possible comics of that character, and then at the end of the year I will total it. And the other character I want to read as much I can of on the DC side is Captain Marvel, Shazam. And I'll always call him Captain Marvel because he is Captain Marvel. But it's interesting. I guess I just never realized that he's never been in a Captain Marvel title since DC has owned him. But you can open up the pages of the comic books, and they'll reference him as Captain Marvel. Except lately, it's not. It's not referenced. But you got Mary Marvel, Captain Marvel Jr., and I don't know if this is a spoiler, but if you go to your Target, there are Shazam toys that are out, and there's quite a few of them. And the toys always give away sort of what characters to expect, even though the Marvel Captain Marvel toys came out, and they had the Grey Gargoyle as one of the toys. And I don't remember seeing the Grey Gargoyle in the movie, but all the other characters were in it, so I wonder if he got the axe. So that's kind of interesting. I need to grab a mint because I'm getting cotton mouth from talking so much, and a glass of water. And then I think I need to do the dishes. I'll probably do them in the morning because what's going to happen is there's probably going to be delays because of our weather conditions in the morning, and I have to go out front and shovel 2 feet drifts that are in the front of the house to get our cars out of the garage. And I probably won't leave for work until 9:30 or 10. So, I have a question for listeners. I like junior mints instead of these peppermint patty mints. And I like to buy a box of them. Target no longer has them. Barb has looked at King Soopers for me, which is our grocery store. They no longer have them. My question is, was there a junior mint recall or something that's gone on to cause a shortage of junior mints? Matter of fact, I'm going to Google it real quick. Junior mint recall? What's happening with junior mints? I don't see anything. There's a class action lawsuit. That could be why we don't see them in grocery stores. It's from 2018. They're being sued for allegedly having too much empty stuff in the box, I guess. So I don't know. Maybe that's why there's a shortage of Junior Mints and I can't find Junior Mint. Harley Quinn, what are you doing? I don't know what's wrong with her. She went out there and she pooped or did something, and now she's like excited. So, what else was I talking about? I'll adopt a character. See, I got distracted with the Junior Mints and the water. And that's why I'm not a professional podcaster. I'm the worst. But let's talk about there's 30 comics. There were 15 Marvel, 2 Dynamite, and 13 DC. We'll start at the 3 out of 5s. We had Venom, The Enemy Within. Number 1. This is one of those miniseries in San Francisco. There are these horrible little goblin creatures that are killing people. And it's actually involved to a sort of a priest-like guy, or actually he was a bad man that somehow walked into a sacrificial cult worshipping thing, and basically got the ability to control these goblin creatures in San Francisco. And things got ugly until these creatures realized instead of worshiping this guy that's controlling them, why not worship the Demo Goblin, which is like the Hobgoblin's demon form. You'll remember him from, I think it was the 90s, Amazing Spider-Man. And, Venom and Morbius are both in this, and they're trying to defeat the goblins working together. And the Demo Goblin kind of just—it's weird how he turns into sort of a good guy here, where he takes all the demons and, like the Pied Piper, leads them into the ocean, which is their it's their weakness. The water's the weakness, so they fall into the ocean and die. So Demo Goblin saves the day, and really, Venom and Morbius were just there to, they were loosely part of the plot. As they were doing research on trying to find out where these little goblins came from, because their sonic cries were actually hurting Venom's symbiote. This was written by Bruce Jones and Bob McLeod. So it was enjoyable. I had fun with it. 3 out of 5 means I liked it. Let's get into the 4 out of 5s. So these 4 out of 5s are things I really liked. We had Red Hood, the Outlaw. They changed the title because he doesn't know where Bizarro and Artemis are. Although he does, they do kind of make an appearance, I think, in 30. Red Hood goes to a small Appleton festival and gets attacked by many people in the town. As he's trying to track down the underlife, he gets knocked out, and then this is what's weird in this story arc is originally these old people in this festival were trying to kill him. Like he pulls out a shotgun, and then the old lady comes out, says she wants a pie, and pulls out a knife and just wants to kill him. And they could have killed him, but once he gets knocked out by the group, this is what I can't figure out. Is why do they tie him to a post and want to sacrifice him to an android Solomon Grundy? Why not have just killed him? And then, with the help of Batwoman, they take down that area, which leads Red Hood to Mexico and an abandoned prison where he finds more Solomon Grundys, which are sold to corrupt people. He also finds Brick. If you guys don't know who Brick is, at least I haven't looked this up, but I know him from the New 52 Teen Titans. He was one of the founding members of the Teen Titans in the New 52. I didn't really look to see if he had an appearance before that. I would have it because I have everything Titans, but I don't remember him prior to that. But he's also in this prison in a tank kind of thing. And there's also a character called Wingman who was in the Batman Inc. story, and he's following Red Hood. He's, just following him, and you don't really know why. There's one scene where he's in the prison and he touches like this wall or something, and he gets a sense that Artemis was there in the prison along with Bizarro. The scene cuts to Artemis and Bizarro in another reality. At the end of the story, he runs into Solitary, who he was after, who he's really after. So we'll see where that goes. And then Brick actually is in that. He's like in a tank. But that's what actually takes out Wingman, is all of a sudden you see this huge brick just coming, flying across the panel, and pow! Hits a Wingman right in the head, as he was kind of like captured Red Hood. I don't even know what his real motive is. I will say it was very entertaining. I enjoyed it, but I really liked it better when it was Red Hood and the Outlaws instead of him just kind of being this brooding guy without his outlaws. We have Detective Comics 991 to 993. This is the James Robinson brings Commissioner Gordon, Batman, and Two-Face together to stop Cobra from infecting all of Gotham. Two-Face is believed dead, but Batman knows that he faked his death by using the two Fireflies. And this sort of ended in a fight scene with Batman going after Two-Face after he, found out that he wasn't dead. He actually knew he wasn't dead. But, you know how that ended. He probably ended in prison, and I think you see him in the following arc by another writer in Arkham Asylum. From Dynamite, I wanted to read some Legend, some Red Sonja, so I went to one of my oldest boxes, looked for some Dynamite books, and I pulled out some Legends of Red Sonja. And this was sort of like scripted. The overarching story was scripted by Gail Simone, and there was a lot of writers in the middle that were scripting it. And it was kind of telling an overarching story about people telling encounters with Red Sonja. The covers are glorious on this mini series. The first story is about Red Sonja and another guy who's going after a sorcerer believed to be dead. He appears dead, but is in some kind of glow. Sonya tells the thief not to touch anything until she kills Zal, that's the sorcerer. He does not listen, of course, and then they have to fight to save their lives. Sonya kills both Zal and the guy she was with. For him to survive later and tell the story of the Red Devil. So the guy you think is got killed by her, he's telling the story as, that's why they call it Legends, because every issue someone's telling the story about how they envision Red Sonja. The second story is about a witch that will achieve all her goals with this white owl, but Red Sonja kills the owl for food. And then the next story is about several warriors going to hunt down, this was really good, Red Sonja, because they had killed her, they had killed their prince, and now they're seeking revenge. And she runs into this hefty woman who tells an early story about how she got Red Sonja her chainmail bikini. There is also one of the guys that is hunting her. Wants revenge for losing his eye. She takes his other eye. Sonya helps a young girl in town, and she becomes the leader of that particular town. There's one of the guys hunting her that wants revenge for losing his eye. Well, I already said that. Sonya, she rescues a plant creature from a cave, and this was weird. They have sex and have a child, so I don't know much more to say, is that she had sex with the plant-like alien creature and had a child, and they never mentioned that child that I've known ever. We then get into the current series of Conan the Barbarian number 3. Oh, I just read 4. I actually loved it. It just keeps getting better and better. Conan is going to be hung in a mining town for stealing gold. His weight actually breaks the tree where he's being hanged, and they have to capture him and starve him. He captures a priest that is there talking to him in prison, kind of like giving him his last rites. And he uses that priest to sort of get out of prison. He's then going, then they're going to pull apart his limbs and cut off and feed to the dogs. Then lightning strike the axeman that's going to cut off his head, and the people let him escape because they think the gods willed it. After that, instead of worshiping Mithra, which I always remember Mithra from Red Sonja, because with Conan it's Crom. They worship the angry god Crom. Scene cuts to the present where he is taken by the kids and the witch for the sacrifice. So that's the underlying theme, is a lot of these Conan books are flashing into the past and flashing into the king days, and then they flash to the current time where he's dealing with this witch and these two creepy kids. So I've been really enjoying it. Venom, Funeral Pyra, number 1 through 3. A young reporter is trying to infiltrate a very dangerous gang that kills innocents to get his father's laboratory, which he worked for AIM on a super soldier serum. The gang kills the old man, and they're going to kill his young nephew when a reporter saves the young kid and asks him to get help from the cops. The kid does not go to get help from the cops, but asks Venom for help. Venom decides to help, but is run in with the Punisher, and Punisher uses Sonics to subdue him while he goes after the gang members. The reporter has to end up killing kids for the gang as he's undercover, and gets killed himself. Venom does not save him this time, and he gets the serum and becomes Pyra. The actual guy that he was trying to save becomes Pyra to fight Punisher and Venom. He is defeated and thought dead after the gang is defeated. And I was listening to some podcast, I think it was the Epic Marvel podcast, and they were talking about a lot of the Venom minis, and they were saying that he did have another appearance, and I can't remember if it was in Secret Invasion or Civil War, but it was one of those event titles. We have Venom Lethal Protector number 1 through 6. This is the first mini. I think I talked about this briefly in several podcasts, but it's the first series where they get a lot of material from the movie. The two main villains, Carlton Drake from the Life Corporation and Roland Treese, were both in the movies, and they're the main villains in Lethal Protector. Roland is killing homeless to find gold in an underground city in San Francisco that went down during the famous earthquake. Eddie wants to protect the homeless, but finds himself fighting these two that know his weakness to Sonics. Also, the homeless don't want him there. They give his backstory with his father briefly. Spider-Man goes to San Francisco, and they work together to overcome the villains. Eddie becomes the protector of the homeless and kind of their hero after the end of the mini. And the movie played upon, like I said, Carlton Drake and Roland Treese as being the main villain. They used the Life Corporation in that. They also used homeless heavily in Venom, as Eddie Brock would always talk to that homeless woman outside, and they were capturing homeless people and testing symbiotes on them. And there was also a scene in this about another symbiote. And that kind of was also in the Venom movie as well. We then have Crypt of Shadows. A man goes. This is a Marvel series that, oh God, it was a 5 out of 5. So now we're talking 5 out of 5s. The Crypt of Shadows. A man goes to talk to a psychiatrist about his fear for dogs. She says she can help him. He tells her about trying to rob a grave of one of his doctors, and he had live dogs in the crypt that killed him. So that was kind of like the first story. He then tells her of his rich wife's love for dogs and how he fed her dog poison after she would not give him money to invest in a drug that would help strengthen bone, because he wanted to make money. And I guess it was like for osteosporosis, or I forget how they pronounce that. Like if you have weak bones or weak spinal backs, this drug was supposed to strengthen the bone. He tries to poison the dog, but what he didn't realize is that his wife would taste the dog food before she gave it to her dog, because this dog was really spoiled and steak was what she usually gave him. And she ends up going mad and he has to kill her. He is then back at the crypt and finds a psychiatrist is his wife, and he's stuck in the crypt with their dogs. Very cool on how the three stories played into the finale. It's like three separate stories, but they all built on the same story. It was fascinating. I thought it was amazing. That was Crypt of Shadows one shot. We had Detective Comics 994 through 997, and opens up with Gordon and Batman investigating the death of the Waynes. They look exactly like the Waynes. They're dressed like them. They have the same jewelry as them. And then that particular killer, there's a particular killer in this that goes after Leslie. Leslie calls Batman, and Batman tries to get there as fast as possible. This creature is out to kill all of Batman's loved ones. He does kill Leslie. And there's a real emotional scene before with Leslie and Bruce before she dies. It is kind of weird that she's dead. If this stays true, it's kind of the loss of a really big support character that I would hate to see go. And what else we got that? Next, he targets Alfred, but they manage to save him. Damien apparently is good at healing punctured lungs. So Batman has Damien help him fix up Alfred. Batman thinks it has to be someone that knows his identity, because he's attacking loved ones, attacking people at the Wayne Manor or the cave, or Leslie Tompkins' clinic. It's somebody that knows his identity. He goes overseas to track down Ducard because he thinks that might be it. And once they meet, the creature comes back and kills Ducard. So there's another one down. Next, he has to protect Thaddeus Brown. Who's Thaddeus Brown? Well, Thaddeus Brown is the first Mr. Miracle. He's the guy that would do all the escape artist activities. And Mr. Miracle, when he escaped from Apocalypse, he met Thaddeus Brown, and that kind of inspired him. Even though Mr. Miracle, in my opinion, cheats because he's got a mother box. They almost die in a water trap with sharks and piranha, but they use their skills to escape because Thaddeus Brown did train Batman. This le then leads them to Hugo Strange. So we're getting very close to issue 1000. We have Venom the Madness, 1 through 3. A lawyer is friends with the underground homeless, and they want to sue a company who's been exposing employees to very toxic chemicals like mercury. They hire Black Tom and the Juggernaut to quiet the lawyer and others. Eddie works to protect them, but as he fights the Juggernaut, falls into some toxic water, and the symbiote, he is attracted to the madness and ends up having to fight his mind. Three different beings in his mind to take control of Venom. There's a weird scene where Venom actually looks like he's gonna rape his lawyer friend, but he doesn't. If not, but ju he might have. But Juggernaut interfered, so that kind of disrupted that scene. But during this time, some employees turn on the boss, and the company gets into trouble. Eddie gets rid of the mercury poisoning, but the lawyer, in which he has established a relationship with now, wants nothing to do with him. Also, Eddie kills an innocent house cleaning lady who happens to be in the chair of the president of the evil corporation, because he thinks he's going to kill the president, and just kills some cleaning lady that just happens to be sitting in his chair, kind of joking around, you know, like, what if I was president of this company, kind of thing. And Eddie kills this woman and doesn't feel remorse either. Very important. We then have JLA 88 through 90. This is the Monkey and Joe Kelly run. Working on finishing this up for DC Spotlight with Kyle. And the first story is the GLA dealing with a terrorist act from Kerak. Or at least that is what Luther leads the JLA to believe. Luther tries to convince them to kill the Kerak leader, but they do not. Then there's a trial by fire, which is amazing. This story I absolutely loved. I had goosebumps and I cried. Scorch got John Jones to forget his fear of fire, which unleashed the Fire Martian to take over his mind. The Fire Martian was defeated a long time ago, and going back to the Green Lantern's guardians, so the blue-skinned guardians, they had to fight this Martian fire god, and the way they did is they had to make Martians have a fear of fire. Once Martian Manhunter gets over the fear of fire, he makes all criminals realize their crimes. So using his, telepathy and all that stuff, there's scenes in Arkham where you see remorse from Batman's villains, which is very weird. You see Luther acting really weird. Luther goes into a coma, and John suggests that he is left that way to Superman, and that is when Superman suspects, hey, there's something wrong. Why would John suggest something like that? A major disaster is falling in love with Faith. Scorch recognizes John is not acting like himself and is very scared. Batman hides his thoughts and knows the only one way to defeat the Fire Martian God is with Plastic Man. Plaz is with his son and he's willing to forget how Plastic Man became. He's forgot about being Plastic Man entirely. He's just being a father now because of his ordeal in Atlantis. There's a great father and son moments as his son tries to convince him that he needs to become Plastic Man again to save the world. The Fire Martian launches the world's nukes, and the JLA has to try to stop them all. John Stewart is the only one who could save the JLA from the assault because of the Guardians' interference. One nuke gets away and destroys North Korea, but before that, Flash at super speed saves 500,000 people in North Korea. Scorch sends, or ends up taking away the fire from the Martian, which frees Martian Manhunter with the help of Manitou, Raven, Atom, and Major Disaster. This puts Scorch into a coma. They say it's the death of Scorch, but it looks like they're keeping her there because she's in some sort of coma. Martian Manhunter defeats the Fire Martian after Scorch kind of helped. He is re-admitted to the Justice League. Batman and Wonder Woman question their relationship, and Diana enters John's machine. He has a machine which can view possible outcomes of them being together. They end up calling it off, even though it would probably work because of they had doubts. And there's lots of like alternate realities that Wonder Woman explored, with them having kids, with him passing away because she's immortal, sort of, and he gets older and he's in a wheelchair, and just different possibilities. And really was an emotional. This whole story arc was a really, really well told. Story. So the top books for that week were from Marvel Comics, Crypt of Shadows, from DC Comics, Detective Comics 994 through 997, from Marvel Comics, Venom the Madness 1 through 3, and JLA 88 through 90. So I think because that lasted so long, I am gonna save the rest for next week. And, reminds you that you can send feedback to me at any time at mike@comicbooknoise.com. Oh, I should probably knock out a top five that Nick sent me before I leave. Okay. Rank. Rank them your top five list of the Teen Titans. So, on the spot. Well, definitely Nightwing slash Robin is my number one position. Number two would have to be Roy, because I love Arsenal and Speedy. Number three, I would go with Wally, Kid Flash. Number four, I guess I would go with Cyborg. And number five, let's just say Raven. Those are my top. And there's a lot of different characters. I guess Wonder Girl didn't make the list. I'm gonna drop Cyborg and replace it with Donna Troy, Wonder Girl. So she would be four and five. Let's go with Raven. So that rounds up my top Teen Titans. Yeah, that's and then he says your top five JSA members. Well, the first one's easy. I love Hawkman. Hawkman is my favorite. Hourman would be in my top five. I love the ability that his will wear out in 1 hour, and then he has to call. You know, you take the Moralco pills, and he becomes an addict. Number three, let's go with Jay Garrick, the Flash. Number four, Alan Scott, Green Lantern. And number five, Wildcat, Ted Grant. So let's go. That's my top five JSA members. And we will stop there and pick up with another top five on the next episode. And again, you can send me questions at any time, and I will add them to this list. You can reach me at Twitter at Mike Myers Brunch if you're at C2E2. And you should know what I look like because you can see my picture on Twitter and Facebook if you can see my picture on Facebook. Say hi. Me and Bill will be there, Geek Brunch. Kyle will hopefully be there one day of the week, but he may not. But we hope to have DC Spotlight there, the crew from there. And say hi. Email will be mike@comicbooknoise.com. You can send me email at any time. You can leave an iTunes review on iTunes if you happen to be around iTunes. Anyway, you can retweet a podcast and keep the Twitters going to Spotlight, Mike M's Weekly Reads, Geek Brunch, or Geek Brunch Retro, or DC Spotlight. I would appreciate it. And on Facebook, you can find all the links for this particular podcast at Geek Brunch Podcast. Click the like button, follow all the episode threads there. The website is geekbrunchpodcast.com. I want to thank you for listening, and I will talk to you very, very soon. You take care. Bye.